couple major moves up in Hartford we want to dive into. First, a measure that would have imposed strict new rules on homeschooling in Connecticut will not be advancing in the state legislature. Joining us now to talk about this major move, and someone who's applauding the move, is State Senator Jason Perillo. Now, the last time I had you on to talk about this, Senator Perillo, we were discussing why homeschooling populations in Connecticut, why they were even being targeted to begin with. So let's talk about this most recent development. Welcome back.
Yeah. So good morning, Melissa. Thanks. You and I have talked about this in the past. We remember back to what happened in Waterbury almost 3 months ago now, where an individual was found. He was, the gentleman was in his early 30s, but had been essentially captive in his home for 20 years. And at the time, you and I were talking about the Department of Children and Families and what they could have done better and what type of study was needed to figure out how they could learn from it. But attention quickly shifted. The state of Connecticut shifted its attention to homeschoolers and attempted to put responsibility for what happened to this poor gentleman on their shoulders. And what did it do? Of course, first it distracted us from DCF, obviously. But what the homeschool community did, I think, is very, very important. I think residents really need to recognize this. They stood up for themselves and they spoke up and they said, no, this is not our fault. We are responsible individuals. Our family, our children learn. Our families are tight-knit. Our community is tight-knit. You're not going to make us the scapegoat. You're not going to change regulations on us to distract from the Department of Children and Families. And they spoke up, and look what happened. Hartford reacted, and they pumped the brakes on what they were attempting to make were some snap judgments and new regulations with no real basis.
You know, it's interesting, Senator Perillo, after our most recent conversation about this, and again, I still argue that when I was going back and forth with you, I actually felt that was a very good conversation. I thought it was, there were certainly times where in our chats, you don't know this, but when we were chatting, I was asking questions just to get the other side of it. That's what we do as reporters. We ask both sides of the argument, and certainly I wanted to know, like what regulations are in place, things like that, and have there been issues in the past with the homeschooling population? After our last conversation, I had a number of parents reach out to me who did not like our conversation. They liked you. They didn't like me so much, and that's okay. That does happen. And I said, I'm just asking very basic questions. Senator Perillo, I thought, answered them to the best of his ability. But I went further and I said, listen, I want to understand this better. I have friends who have homeschooled their children. I know that it is a very successful model. I know a lot of kids swear by it, and they feel it's a lot better than our public school system. And so I certainly wasn't dogging homeschooling, but I did ask, what is in place? Are we checking on these kids? So on and so forth. I had the opportunity to talk with the Connecticut Homeschool Network Incorporated. Did not even know we had a group called that, but it was really neat to be able to talk to them. And some of the things that I found to be the most alarming is that they are always scapegoated a lot of the time when horrible things happen in Connecticut. Some of the concrete examples that they brought up, for example, was in 2012, the homeschooling community, unbeknownst to me, was brought into the center of the Sandy Hook tragedy because Adam Lanza, while he was not homeschooling, was enrolled but was provided education but was homebound, doing homebound instruction at the time. And I guess they were blamed for that, or they were looked at, I should say. That was sort of the state's approach to, how do we prevent something like this happening again? Let's look at homeschooling. They brought up another situation where this person was not homeschooled in 2018, but again, they were brought up in now the 2025 incident in Waterbury. So that alone, I feel like, is sort of a repeat pattern. And I'm wondering if you think that's a big reason why lawmakers are like, whoa, we're about to annoy a lot of people. I mean, we had 2,000 plus people show up to the Capitol earlier this month and said, you're not going to blame us for what happened in Waterbury. You're not going to use us as the reason that you're fixing a problem that had nothing to do with us.
Well, and it's funny you talk about that, because at the end of the day, and I think I said this when we talked last, it's all about government control, right? Mm. What do government bureaucrats want to do? They want to control things. Now, they control DCF, and that kind of went sideways and led to some of this problem, but they don't control homeschooling. And to your point about Sandy Hook and efforts that have been made to scapegoat a homeschooling community, that's one more thing to do. They use it, government bureaucrats use it as a way to gain control because that's what they want. I will say, though, I think what I've heard Democrats in Hartford say is that, you know, they wanted to give this opportunity, you know, give the issue of homeschooling an opportunity to simmer and give the public an opportunity to chime in. And that's why they're not moving forward. Mm-hmm. But I think, Melissa, you hit the nail on the head. It's because they don't want a political fight. And, you know, they don't want to ruffle any feathers any more than they already have. So they're basically tabling this. But that said, tabling does not mean that it's gone forever. So I think it's very, very important for folks who made their voices heard, who came to the Capitol, like you said, thousands over the last few weeks, to be present. You know, don't take your eye off the ball, because this is going to be right back in front of us next year. And it'll be one more attempt to scapegoat homeschooling families, and to your point, Melissa, who are doing a wonderful job, mm-hmm. and yeah. who you know are I know they're really a wonderful community that works together, and it's a shame that government would try to use them as the excuse.
Yeah, no, it certainly, and again, I even some of the reports I have seen where there have been some sources that have said that this man in Waterbury was homeschooled. There's no record of that. No one has said that. So the fact that, to me, I always say it's looked at as checkmark legislation. You know, hey, we addressed something, you know, up in Hartford. We saw there was a problem. And instead of going right to the source, which, I mean, I think really in question with this case, at least, is DCF. I think, I know the school system is being looked at, as well as even the police, but I think the big thing here is DCF, especially because there were reports. So when I was talking again to the CT Homeschool Network, I asked, does DCF ever need to do checks? They said, of course they do. If a report of abuse or neglect and it's accepted at DCF, it will be checked. However, you know, are there going to be constant checks? They said, look, homeschooling is just like if you were to leave an employer. You're no longer checked in on like an employee. The same thing happens when you withdraw a child from the school district. They know about it. You don't have to check in every year to say, hey, we're still homeschooling. But we're sort of comparing apples to oranges, essentially. And so, like you said, this is off the table for now. Do you really think it'll come back? Or do we wait for the next tragedy to bring it back?
No, I think there are a lot of folks in Hartford in government who really have, honestly, disdain for homeschoolers. That's just my personal opinion. So I would be shocked if this does not come back. And I think it's very, very important that folks remain attentive and are ready for this discussion if it comes back next year. I do think it will.
Parks and Rec summer camps are sounding the alarm about a past Senate bill that could raise the prices for those local camps in your town or city, or worse, it could shut them down for good if it gets full passage. We have Senator Jason Perillo here to talk more about this. And it sounds like part of it is to sort of get them at the same operation level as childcare facilities, which is like licensing, background checks, all of that. But it seems like the bigger problem with this is the requirements for facilities. That's going to up the costs, right?
Well, and that's 100% the situation here. So, you know, what the bill does, and to be clear, I oppose the bill, vote against the bill. But what the bill does is it puts a lot of the physical plant ratios on, you know, municipal run day camps, makes them the same as privately run day camps. But I'll give you sort of a simple example of why that's a problem. So for private day camps, there has to be, I never thought I'd be talking about this, but 20 toilets for every person participating in the camp. 20. Now,
why?
I know in Shelton, which is my hometown, Stratford, yeah. which I represent, a lot of those camps are actually held at schools. Now, the building code for schools says the ratio is 50 people to every one toilet, double. So how on earth are towns and schools going to double the number of bathroom facilities available to the campers that are there?
Like, I mean, have there been like complaints or something? Have there been issues where kids are having, you know, a lack of toilets has led to, you know, child cruelty? I'm confused because here's the thing, Senator Perillo. The first part of this bill to me, I was like, okay, I could almost get on board with this. And the reason I think that is because when you talk about the background checks, for example, it is a little surprising to me that it's not in line with what we want from our childcare, because it is true. Over the summer, I mean, this is our lifeline. For us to be able to put our kids into an affordable summer camp is very hard to find. But you do want to know they're with good people. And I mean, look, last year we had that case out of Bethany, the former town employee who then started working for Parks and Rec. And he had been sexually assaulting young children, allegedly. So I get the background checks and checking that. But the facility costs, that's the part where I thought, wait, like, hard stop. Why? Have there been calls to action for this? Have there been major events where, because of a lack of toilets, for example, like, camps had to get shut down? I'm confused.
Now, this whole thing started about, you know, regarding that case in Bethany. And that was originally a call for background checks. Sadly and ironically, Bethany uses background checks, and the individual, the alleged molester, actually had a background check.
So that's not fun. In this particular case, didn't even do it.
There's a lit match, and government puts it out with a fire hose. So there was this one thought that, gee, we can fix this one-off problem, and we'll just do it by changing all the regulations for all the municipal day camps in the state of Connecticut. And when municipal leaders came forth and said, you know, this is a problem for us, we can't afford this, we can't do it, we may have to close, the legislature kind of said, well, many in the legislature sort of said, well, no, you're wrong. You can do it. We don't believe you. You know, we're smart. You're not smart. And that's kind of that's a tone that kind of permeates the Capitol at Hartford. I've been there long enough to observe that. And that's not an indictment of any specific individuals. It's sort of that Hartford mentality of, you know, big government works, we know better. And in this case, it's really putting a lot of these municipal camps at risk. And in a lot of communities, look, my daughter's 11. We play the summer camp game, trying to find a camp every week. Now, some of these things are $300, $400 a week or more.
We have to budget in the new year for summer camp. Six months out, it's crazy. You've got a part-time job to afford these things. It's crazy. Mm-hmm.
But in a lot of our communities, the municipally run day camp is not just an affordable option. It is the only.
It's the only option. It's a lifesaver. Yeah. That's crazy.
So if we're really serious about protecting disaffected youth,
yeah,
what's the worst thing you can do? Let them stay home. That's terrible. Let's have them out socializing with kids at a municipal camp.
Well, that doesn't work. I mean, like,
here's going to socialize.
Well, and what is that? What do you mean? We can't keep them home. So, like, I can't do my job. Right. You know what I mean? My husband can't do his job. We have to be in person to do it. That's not an option. So I guess we bring a six-year-old into this. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just that's not a viable option. It's very tone deaf to say, well, you could do it, or if you can't, then you just keep them home. It's just not an option. 3 months is a long time. And that's where I thought, okay, with the background checks, I can get on, and I can't imagine that costing an awful lot. But when you're talking about now just overhauling the facilities, you lost me there. And I'm not saying you, but the legislation lost me there. I mean, do you think this is going to get enough support to pass? I saw it pass the Senate, but there was a Democrat who voted against it as well, but it still had a majority passing it.
Yeah, a Democratic senator from Eastern Connecticut voted against it. She gave a very impassioned speech as to why. Will it pass in the House? I honestly don't know. I know there are some concerns about it. They're largely related to the risk that these camps will close.
Mm.
But, you know, sort of it's a wait and see. You know, it's interesting, the game that goes back and forth between the House and the Senate. Sometimes one chamber is the gas pedal and the other is the brake. And then on other issues, it's vice versa. So hopefully cooler heads will prevail on this. The House will, at a minimum, make the bill better, if not, reject it in its entirety. But there is room for things like background checks. They're not expensive, to your point, Melissa. In fact, many of us suggested that we simply implement background checks as a mandatory check in all camps, and that was rejected by the majority because they felt that wasn't enough. So, you try to fix these problems for communities, for families, and again, sometimes you feel like Hartford politicians just aren't listening. It's frustrating sometimes.
Very all or nothing. Let's talk about, using logical heads. Certainly cool down. I love that term, but just logical. I mean, come on. Senator Perillo, I want to thank you so much for talking about some of these issues being discussed up in Hartford. And as you mentioned, we will see what happens next. Thank you so much.